Okay, so we're starting the Meshech Chachma, Parshas Shmini, and a number of the pieces we'll see tonight, especially one piece which is especially powerful and very yesodistic, deal with the Yom HaShmini L'Miluim, the eighth day of the process of the dedication of the Mishkan, the various karbanos which are brought therein, and of course the tragedy which befalls Nadav Avihu, their death on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the very day which was supposed to be the greatest, you know, one of the greatest days ever, the day on which the Mishkan was dedicated. I want to start just with a brief analysis that the Meshech Chachma has of one of the karbanos which is brought on that day. And just to start, before we see the Meshech Chachma itself, we'll take a look at the psukim in Chumash. Very beginning of Parashat Shmini, Vayhi Bayom HaShmini Kara Moshe Aaron Levana Lezikne Yisrael. On the eighth day, Moshe called in Aaron and his sons and the Zikanim, the elders, Vayom El Aaron. He told Aaron, Kach Lecha Egel Ben Bokir Lechatos, take a young bull, a calf, as a korban chatos, V'ayu L'Ola Tzmimim, and you should take a ram for a carbon ola, Yal B'nai Yisrael T'davar Le'mar K'chus T'ir'izim L'chatos, and when you speak to B'nai Yisrael, tell them, the next pasuk, take a goat as a carbon chatos. Right? So, what's the significance of the egel, of the calf that Moshe, that Aaron rather, brings as a carbon chatos? The Rashi tells us, Kach L'cha egel, says Rashi, Lo Dia Shemachatel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ayidei Egel Zeh Maisel Egel She'osa. Right? This Egel, Zeh Shalva Egel Egel, this Egel, this calf, which Aaron is bringing as a Korban Chatos, is because Aaron is a Korban Chatos. Aaron was so involved with the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf, so this Egel which he's bringing as a Korban Chatos is going to be Mechater for the Cheto Egel and his involvement in the Cheto Egel. Okay, fine and good. What's the Seir Ezen? What's the story with the goat that Klal Yisrael, that is brought on behalf of Klal Yisrael as a chatos for them? That Rashi doesn't say. Right? We see that the egel is the chatos for the Maisel egel. What exactly is, and so obviously we see that the choice of animals is significant. So then what's the significance of the Seir Ezen of the goat, which is brought on behalf of Klal Yisrael as a chatos? So this the Meshech Chachma addresses. And he quotes from Taras Kahanim, it's on page Reish Gimel, the top of the left-hand column in the Meshech Chachma, Kukul Se'iris and Lechatos, Taras Kahanim, Asem Yesh Lachem Tchilo V'Sof, the usage of the Se'ir Ezen has a beginning or has it end. In other words, the Se'ir Ezen, the ghost, pops up earlier in Jewish history, namely, Tchilo Shenemar, Vayish Chetu Se'ir Ezen. It says when the brothers sold Yosef into slavery, so it says that they, after they sold him, they shechted a goat, and they dipped the ksonas Yosef into blood, and that was part of the deception, the ruse, which they used in order to fool Yaakov Avinu, right? So, but the obvious question is, okay, so the goat, which is being brought, is mechaper for the Mechiris Yosef. Why schlep the Mechiris Yosef into the picture right now? The egel, I understand. The egel was the sin which immediately preceded the building of the Mishkan. In some sense, Mefarshim argue, the Mishkan is the reaction to the Maiseh HaEgel. So it makes sense that before the Mishkan is going to be dedicated, there should be some public acknowledgement of the Cheto Egel and some carbon which is brought to be mechaper to the Maiseh HaEgel. Right? There's a very clear connection between the Egel and the Mishkan. But Mechiras Yosef, that's old news already. Why schlep the sin of Mechiras Yosef into the ceremonies of the dedication of the Mishkan?
I would suggest that, first of all, one thing that Egel had in common with Mechiras Yosef is that it was a responsibility of the whole, just like the Egel, it was a responsibility of the whole Klal Yisrael, it was a responsibility for it. It was also a responsibility of the whole cloud, all grounding results just pick up like that. And this is the first situation where they're bringing carbon copies that they didn't have a mission in time.
Right, so maybe this is just the first opportunity that they have to respond to the Ma'aseh Mechiras Yosef. Okay, very good. You could certainly suggest that idea that basically the sin has been in abeyance, for so many years, and now they finally have the opportunity to address that. Now, Shachachma is an interesting insight. Pirush. Al Mechiras Yosef yesh ksas amaslo. The truth is, says the Meshachachma in a very, very fascinating way, there's a connection between Mechiras Yosef and the Ma'aseh Ha'egel. The kapara which they have to bring on Mechiras Yosef is actually spurred on by the sin of the Egel Hazav. How so? Because says the Meshech Chachma, up until the sin of the golden calf, they had a little bit of an amasla. They had a little, Kal Yisrael had a little bit of an excuse to explain away the fact that they had treated Yosef so callously and so terribly. How so? Mishum di Yosef lo hayo lo lahami di basam ra lo Yaakov, rak hayo lo lo chichon da atzmo. Right? The brothers really could have said, look, Yosef in a certain sense got what he deserved. He was just trying to, when he reported back to Yaakov, Ayomi Yosef, Dibasan Ra Laviyah, when he reported back to Yaakov about all the terrible things that he thought that the brothers were doing, he was just trying to straighten them out to get them to do tshuva on their perceived aveiros. Yeah, but the brothers would have countered, come to us. What are you running to Tati? What are you running to him to tell him about all of our supposed misdoings? Come to us. Come to the source. We can take tochacha. What you did is called lashon hara. Right? When you go to somebody else and tell him all about somebody's failings, that's called lashon hara. When you go to the person, the perpetrator himself, and you tell them, that's called tochacha. It was that quality which the brothers saw in Yosef, which made them think, again, as Mefarshim explained, that Yosef was a rodef, that Yosef had it in for them, and that they had to take him down, etc., etc., etc. They said, look, he should have come to us. Oh, all of that is before the Ma'aseh Ha'egel. Aval achshav shechur shokhiach osam harago shuv nisor aleim chet mechiras Yosef she'en metavun tochacha. So what happens? So comes the episode of the chet ha'egel, the golden calf, and as Chazal tells us, Chur gets up in front of the Jewish people and says, my dear Jewish brothers, don't do it. This is Avodah Zarah. This is terrible. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want us to do this. He gives Mussar to the Jewish people, just like the Jewish people said Yosef should have done. And what do the people do to Chur? They kill him. So now, all of a sudden, the Ribbono Shel Olam comes back to Klal Yisrael with a taina. Calls man that you didn't have the episode with the Ma'aseh Ha'egel. You had a response to how badly you treated Yosef. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You shouldn't have gone to Yaakov. You should have gone to you directly. But now that the episode with Chur takes place, so if the Jewish people come and say, look, Yosef should have come to us directly and told us to our faces, what his tochacha was, so the Ribbono Shel Olam, in hearing the case, would have said, so what? So you would have, so that he should, you should kill him the same way that subsequently you killed Chur by the Ma'aseh Ha'egel. Right? So the very killing of Chur indicates that Klal Yisrael are not ready to receive Tochacha. So in other words, what the Meshech Chochma has done, he's shown that the need to be Mechaper for Mechiras Yosef becomes stronger after the Ma'aseh Ha'egel. It's not just simply that we're correcting an old fault from years and years and years ago. It was Nisorer. It wakes up again. It's rejuvenated after the Chet Ha'egel, and the inability of Klal Yisrael to accept Tochacha becomes highlighted once again. So now you have no excuse for what you did to Yosef. Right? So ultimately, the Chatos of Aaron, the Egel, and the Chatos on behalf of Klal Yisrael, the Sir Yitzim, all stem from the events of the Egel Hazav, which happened not so long before. Very, very fascinating. I want to turn our attention to page Resh Hay in the Meshech Chochma, the bottom left-hand column, and fast forward a little bit to the beginning of Perek Yud, which describes the tragedy of Nadav Aviyu. Says Vayikhu v'nei Aaron, again in the pasuk, the sons of Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, they took ish machtasa, each person, each of them took his censer, his pan, vayitnu vohein esh, they placed coals in the pan, vayasimu alei kataras, then they took the incense and put the incense into the pans. Vayakrivu lufnei Hashem esh zara, asher lo tziva osa. And then they brought before HaKadosh Baruch Hu a foreign fire, they brought a kataras which had not been commanded by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and of course we know that that's what the Torah singles out as being the reason for the death of Nadav Avihu. Where did they bring this kataras? Where did they bring this incense? Right, the pasuk doesn't exactly say. Right? Right, Lufnei Hashem. Right, so, but what's Pshat Lufnei Hashem? Right, so you might say, well, Lufnei Hashem means the normal place where you would bring kataras, which is in the Mizbeach HaPnimi, right, the inner Mizbeach, and if they went into the Kodesh, and they brought kataras there where it would normally be brought, right? But, once again, you know, the pasuk is not explicit. It depends how you understand Lufnei Hashem. The Meshech Chachma suggests the following. Vayikhu Bnei Aaron Vayosim Oleh Kataras, Pshat HaMikra Nira, it would appear from Pshat in the Chumash, Tehem Iktir HaKataras V'Mizbeach HaChisa. That they actually brought the Kataras on the outer Mizbeach, the Mizbeach that normally was not a place of bringing Kataras, the Mizbeach which was normally a place of bringing the animal sacrifices. Right? What's he going to do with Nei Hashem? We'll see in a moment. Right? But why does he say that the Pshat suggests this? I guess just because the Pshat doesn't, again, if you don't read Lufnei Hashem as meaning the Kodesh, there's no indication otherwise in the Pasuk, and, you know, lacking any indication otherwise, Stam Mizbeach, Lufnei Mizbeach Achitza. So they brought on Mizbeach Achitza. V'chein Kosu Toysus Erevin Daf Stam Eskimu Amin Alta Toysus Tiramasko Maidar Ishu Uyen Shah. And by the way, Toysus says this also in Erevin. Okay. The time of Mahoya, why would they bring, assuming that that's correct, why would they bring Kitaris on the Mizbeach HaChitza? Right? The normal place for bringing Kitaris is the Mizbeach HaPnimi. If this is correct, why would they have brought Kitaris on the Mizbeach HaChitza? He says as follows. Dimashik Tzibu L'Hachtiv V'Mizbeach HaPnimi. The fact that ordinarily one brings Kitaris on the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the inner Mizbeach, is Mishum Shesham HaYakodesh HaKodashim, because the Kodesh HaKodashim is there, meaning not there mamish, but in that area, v'hime atzmusa Kodesh Kodashim, and the Ktaras itself is incredibly sacred, v'chein kosuv b'rosh kisisa b'amokom asher yivo'ed l'cha shama. And that's what it says in Parshas Kisisa, the Ktaras should be brought in the place where I come to visit you. In other words, the Hashra'as Hashchina is somehow tied in with the place where you bring the Kataras. The Kataras, because it's on such a high level of Kedusha, is brought Dafka in that place which is as close as you can come to the Iker Mokom Hashra'as Hashchina, the place where God's presence is most felt. You know, in a certain sense you would bring in the Kodesh HaKodashim itself, which is what is done on Yom Kippur, of course. But, you know, outside of Yom Kippur, as close as you can come to the Kodesh HaKodashim, which is the Kodesh, the area right outside the Kodesh HaKodashim, that's the proper place for Kataras, because Kataras is connected to the place where God's presence is felt. The Ko'es, however, what happened on that Rosh Chodesh Nisan? On that day on which the Mizbeach, the Mishkan was dedicated. Ko'es, Shehako Ro'es HaKovel, Mizbeach HaChitza. Right? What happened right before this? If you look back in the Pasuk, right before the description of Nadav Avihu, it says that they performed all of the karbanos, again, at the end of Perek Tes, they performed all of the karbanos on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, all of the animal sacrifices which they brought, and then Chaf Gimel, Vayovu Moshe Aaron El Oel Moed, Vayetzu Vayvarchu Es Ha'am, Moshe Aaron leave the Oel Moed, they blessed the people, Vayeroch Vod Hashem El Kol Ha'am. God's glory appeared to the entire people. In what sense? So presumably in the following sense. The next pasuk goes on to say, Vatetzei Esh Melifnei Hashem, Vatochal Al Mizbeach Et Ha'olav Yesachalovim. A fire miraculously descends from heaven, consumes everything that's on the Mizbeach HaChitzon. Vayar Kol Ha'am Vayoronu. The people see this and they shout. Vayiplu Al Pneiem, and they fall down on their faces. In other words, there is a hashra'as hashchina on the Mizbeach HaChitza. A one-time event, right? By Yirachon Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory shows itself, manifests in one way, in the fact that all of a sudden this fire comes down from heaven directly and consumes everything that's on the Mizbeach HaChitza. So the people see the Kvod Hashem, whatever that means exactly, they experience hashra'as hashchina on the Mizbeach HaChitza. So let's go back to the Meshech Chochma. The Ko'eis Shakol Ro'ot HaKov, the top of page Reshvav. The Ko'eis Shakol Ro'ot HaKov Mizbeach HaChitzon. Now that they all saw the glory of God manifest on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, Hayo'ole Al Daitom, they thought, Shedin Mizbeach HaChitzon, Hukim Mizbeach HaPnimi. They now thought, oh, I guess for the purposes of today, the Mizbeach HaChitzon has become the new Mizbeach HaPnimi, at least for today. Because the Mizbeach HaPnimi ordinarily is that place which is closest to the Hashra'as HaShchina. But given the extraordinary appearance of God's presence outside on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, the Mizbeach HaChitzon has just been transformed temporarily into something that has the Kedusha and the Maila, the attributes of the Mizbeach HaPnimi. And says in Meshech Chochma, and they had other reasons to assume that that's true. They also saw that Aaron's carbon chatos was totally burned. Let's just see that back in the psukim. It says that starting in Perek Tes Pasuk Ches, by Yikrav Aaron al Mizbeach, that same eagle that Aaron brought as a carbon chatos, he shechted. Right, so they sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, meaning the mizbeach hachitzon. There's hachela, there's haklayos, and all of the parts which are burned on the mizbeach are burned on the mizbeach. And then pasuk yiralef, yes habosor, yes haor, sorach boesh michut b'machane. Even though, as we spoke about last week, ordinarily a chatos which is brought on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, the chalokim are burned on the Mizbeach, but the Kohanim eat the flesh of the carbon. Here, the flesh of the carbon chatos was treated like a chatos hapnimi. It was treated like a chatos which would normally be, whose blood would be sprinkled on the Mizbeach hapnimi, like a par helam dover shal tzibur, a par kohen moshiach, par yom ha-kippurim, right? The flesh was taken and burnt outside the machane. And Rashi actually points to this. If you look in Rashi, Pasuk Yiralef, there's Abosar V'Yasa'or, Lo Motzinu Chatos Chitzona Nisreses Elezo V'Shel Miluim. This is basically the only time we find that a chatos, which is brought on a Mizbeach HaChitzon, has the flesh burned and not eaten by the Kohanim. In other words, we're treating this chatos HaChitzona like a chatos hapnimis. The kulan al pi adibur. Why? Says Rashi. Because God says so. That's how it is. Right? The Rashi just says, well, that's how it is. The Meshech Chochma says, no, there's a svara. What's the svara? The svara is that for the purposes of today, the Mizbeach HaChitzon has become the Mizbeach HaPnimi. Why is the Mizbeach HaChitzon become the Mizbeach HaPnimi? Because of the Hashra'as HaShchina. Because of the fact that God revealed himself in such a public way of the Mizbeach HaChitzon. So for today's purposes, it's like the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and the Bnei Aaron, others of you say, well, the raya to that, the proof to that, is the fact that God told Aaron, take your chatos and burn it following the halachas as if it was a chatos HaPnimis. Right? So they had learned the Meshech Chochma and Parshas Tzav. They knew what we spoke about last week. Right? So they said, okay, I guess the pshat is that the Mizbeach HaChitzon for today's purposes has temporarily been transformed into a Mizbeach HaPnimis. Oh, okay, so we'll get to that. He's going to talk about that. Yeah. V'chol m'nei shirol shekom l'chadish l'ar in Yisra v'hoyo v'dimyonom. They thought shekdushas ha-Mizbeach v'shmini din heichol yeshla. They thought that davka on the eighth day of the Miluim, the Mizbeach HaChitzon had been transformed into a Mizbeach HaPnimi as if it was in the Eichel, as if it was in the complex of the Beit HaMikdash itself. The Chochatus asher yuva midomer la-Kodesh Pnimo, and the halacha is, as we learned last week, right, if the Chatos has its blood sprinkled on the Mizbeach HaPnimi, Bo'esh Yisoreh, Shekol Chatos Pnimi Nisrefes, a inner Chatos is going to be burned, V'lochach Nisref Paro Shel Aaron, and that's why they thought that the Paro of Aaron had been burned, V'lochach Hiktiru Al Mizbeach HaChitzon V'Nisrefu, and that's why when they went to bring the Ktoros, they brought it on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, not on the Mizbeach HaPnimi. Now, let's just go back to the Lashon, Vayakiru L'Sneh Hashem, Vayakribu L'Sneh Hashem Eish Zora, right? They brought before God a foreign fire. According to the Meshech Chachma, those two words, L'Sneh Hashem, now take on a different meaning. You know, L'Sneh Hashem, we might have thought, meant by the Mizbeach HaPnimi in the Kodesh, but now, according to Meshech Chachma's interpretation, it means something different. It means L'Sneh Hashem, in the Mizbeach HaChitzon, which was now the equivalent of being before God, because of the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory, which had taken place in the presence of the Mizbeach HaChitzon. And that's presumably why those words are chosen, instead of saying that they went, you know, the Lashon is very meduyum. It doesn't say, Vayakrivu the Kodesh Eish Zoro. Vayakrivu l'sneh Hashem Eish Zoro. They brought it on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, but they did so because they saw the Mizbeach HaChitzon as now being l'sneh Hashem, as taking on those qualities of being before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Mizbeach HaChitzon was ki'ilu, it was as if. It was the Mizbeach HaPnimi. Oh, so this fits in with what we find later on in the parasha as well. After Nadav and Avihu are killed, so the Torah goes on to tell us in Perek Yud Pasuk Tezayin, right, afterwards, Moshe Rabbeinu asked about the Seir Rosh Chodesh, right, which of course was brought that day, was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and he found out that instead of the Chatos of Rosh Chodesh being eaten by the Kohanim, they had burned the Chatos of Rosh Chodesh in its entirety, right? No, this is the Seir Chatos of Rosh Chodesh. If you take a look in Rashi, Tzedayin, Seir Chatos, Seir Musay Rosh Chodesh. Right? It was the Seir of Rosh Chodesh, which we normally bring on Rosh Chodesh. Shlosh Seir Chatos Karbu Babayom. There were three Seirim, three goats, which were born as a Korban Chatos on that day. Kechus Seir Izim, the one which Klal Yisrael brought as a Kapara, a special Kapara from Mechiras Yosef, we spoke about before. Seir Nachshon, right? It was the first Nachshon brought his Karban on that day. The Seir Rosh Chodesh, right? And the Seir, which would be born as a Korban Chatos for Rosh Chodesh, because it was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? The only one which was burnt was the carbon of the of Rosh Chodesh, which was burnt. And Rashi goes on to quote from Chazal differences of opinion as to why the Kohanim thought that the right thing to do was to burn it. Moshe Rabbeinu was upset when he learned that that the Kohanim had burnt it. So says the Meshech Chochma, part of Moshe's anger goes back to this cheshbon as well. V'lochein also yachatus kipshuto shalfir ha'om ko'e shichatos ha'om nisraf dorash v'hinei sorof v'lochach ha'yiksof ala lozer v'yisomar bonof anosorim sha'af heim ha'yu ru'uyim l'sreifo sh'ladaito sh'to sh'din chatos bishmini sh'akol ro ha'kovim izbeach ha'chitzon hevi chatos din chatos pnimi yeshlo v'nisraf. Im came zel atar shel nodav aviv shivnei ze hikir mizbeach hachitzon ze im came gam heim ruuyim la'osa onesh. Now the Meshech Chochma points out, although we just explained that the seir chatos which was burnt was the seir of Rosh Chodesh, right? The pasuk is not clear on that point. The Meshech Chochma says the truth is, in terms of pashut pshat, the seir chatos which was burnt was the seir chatos which was mentioned at the beginning of the parsha. Right? Why should we schlep in the seir chatos of Rosh Chodesh over here? It isn't explicitly mentioned anywhere here. That's the Meshech Chochma. The simple pshat is that Moshe Rabbeinu asked about the seir chatos, the one which was brought from Mechiras Yosef, which we spoke about before, and he found that the Bnei Aaron had totally burned that one and not kept over the flesh for eating. And that got Moshe Rabbeinu very angry. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu said as follows, oh, why did you burn the soy izim that was for Mechiras Yosef? Must be that you had this whole cheshbon that the Mizbeach HaChitzon is Mizbeach HaPnimi, and we may look, the same way that Aaron's tar was burned, it's only proper to burn the Seir Izim. But I didn't tell you to burn the Seir Izim. The Seir Izim was supposed to be consumed. You had a cheshbon that the Mizbeach HaChitzon is like a Mizbeach HaPnimi. That's the same cheshbon number that Avihu had when they brought the Ktaras on the Mizbeach HaChitzon. And you see what happened to them. So Moshe Rabbeinu was very angry and I lost her any summer because he said, look, if you're just going to make the same mistake that Nadav and Avihu did, why do you think that you deserve to live when they died? Right? And then he quotes the Gvar Yuma that says that Elazar and Yisomar were, in a sense, just as royal as Srefa, as Nadav and Avihu. They were just as deserving of being killed. Where do we get that idea from? Right? So, says the Meshech Chachma, it's from this idea that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu originally thinks that their burning of the Seir Izim was a repetition of the mistake that Nadav and Avihu had made trying to cheshbon the Mizbeach HaChitzon as having the properties of the Mizbeach HaPnimi. Now, of course, he knows that the end, Omnom Rabboteinu Pirshu Ba'ofen Acher, Yuhun B'Taras Kohanim, as we just quoted from Rashi, it was, again, just quoting from Chazal, Chazal explained the whole incident with the Seir Chatos as referring to the Seir Chatos of Rosh Chodesh, not the Seir Chatos that was unique for this eighth day, the Seir Chatos, which was Mechater on Mechiras Yosef. Right? And that takes some of the punch out of the explanation of the Meshech Chochmah. But again, the Meshech Chochmah, you know, isn't bothered by that. He said, look, on the level of Poshet of Shef, the simple reading of the Tzukim, the Seir Chatos, which was burned, seems to have been the Seir Chatos of Mechiras Yosef, in which case, Moshe Rabbeinu was exceedingly upset because it seemed like they were just following the mistake which already had been made by Nadav and Avihu. Yeah.
I'm making this side issue. What was Nadav and Avihu's havanina?
What was their havanina? Meaning?
In other words, they were punished that they did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But why? Why did they think that it could be right?
Okay, so we'll see the next piece is going to talk a little bit about the sin of Nadav and Avihu in broader terms. Okay. The next piece, which really is, I think, kind of like the centerpiece for tonight, very, very beautiful, extensive piece, is the very next piece, Resh Vav, Hu Asher Dibar Hashem Leimor B'Krovai Yekodesh, Al Pnei Kol HaOmek Kovei. After the death of Nadav and Avihu, so, of course, the Pasuk says, Vayomer Moshe El Aaron. Moshe says to Aaron, Teragir Pasuk Gimel, Hu Asher Dibar Hashem Leimor. This is really just what Hashem had said, saying, Bikrovai Yekodesh, I will be sanctified through those who are close to me, V'al Pnei Kol HaOmek Kovei, and that will lead to me being honored by the rest of the people, which apparently is meant as some kind of consolation to Aaron. Don't feel so bad. Your sons were really kedoshim. They were incredible people, and that's why they were killed. Vayidom Aaron, and Aaron was silent. He accepted these words of consolation. And of course, it's very puzzling just on any level. Whatever Nadav and Avihu did that was wrong, and again, the Pasuk says they did one thing, Chazal gives different interpretations of what they did. It's hard to imagine that whatever they did was so bad that they were deserving of such a horrific punishment at such an inauspicious time. I mean, and after all, it marred the entire dedication ceremony of the Mishkan. And Bichlal, what is the answer that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives to Aaron? Don't feel bad about it. Bikrovai Yekodesh, I will be sanctified through those who are close to me. Why is that exactly a consolation? So the Meshech Chochma deals with the need for Nadav and Avihu to be killed, and he broadens that into a bigger discussion about how Kiddush Hashem works. So it's all very, very important. They had to die, says the Meshech Chochma. Chazal tell us that anyone who says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a vatram, that God doesn't care when people sin, and God is quick to forgive, God's a pushover, you know, kivyachol. When people say that Kodesh Baruch Hu can be easily placated. If someone says that, so Rachmanu Litzlan, he will forfeit his life. To make such a statement about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, don't worry. You know, God will forgive you. It's not such a big deal. Sometimes you hear this from people, right? You know, what do you mean? What do you mean you can't go out to this Shreifa restaurant? You know, come on, you're good most of the time. God will let it go this time, you know? I mean, you hear this sometimes from people, right? You hear it mostly from people outside of the Frum Machane, but occasionally you hear it from people within the Frum Machane, who hopefully should, one would think, would know better than to make such statements. The Gemara says if you make such a statement about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachmanu Litzlan, it's a terrible thing, because, you know, to portray HaKadosh Baruch Hu as, you know, this kind of, forgive me, yeah, it's easy going, come on, you know, he lets things slide. Rachmanu Litzlan, you'll undermine the entire notion of Torah, because if God doesn't really care, if he gives you a free pass all the time, so then why should anybody follow Torah mitzvahs? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, you know, just, you know, give you a free pass. Yisrael chatu ba'egel. Now, remember the context. The Jewish people had sinned by the egel. The nitzlu edyom. They took off the crowns which had been given to them. V'husar ha'anan u'bad l'kom ha'alosan. The anari ha'kavit had been taken away and all of the greatness of Klal Yisrael had been suspended. V'achrei tfilas Moshe v'ha'v'osan zov la'mishkan. So after Moshe Rabbeinu davened for the Jewish people and they brought all the gold for the Mishkan, Chazru Anani Akavod, the Anani Akavod came back, Ushchina Shoru Beneim, and the Shechina returned. Vekimu Kohanim, Levim, Ve'esh Yotam, Nashamayim. And all these Gevaldika things happened. Kohanim, Levim, as we read a little bit earlier, fire descending from heaven, miraculously consuming the Karbanos, and Kain Yomar Yisrael. So there's a very great danger that the Jewish people will say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Noach Lirzo, so, God's easy going. It's easy to, you know, his bark is worse than his bite. You know, he made a big deal about, yeah, I'm going to destroy the Jewish people. The Esther Oskel is like, oh, and look what happened at the end of the day. Everything's fine. Everything's wonderful. He's not as scary as he makes himself out to be. What's that? Right, in Ochinami, but, you know, there's no Achleratos and there's no Achleratos. In other words, you know, no Achleratos after we bang ourselves against the wall, you know, for 25 hours while we're fasting and davening and whatnot. You know, in the context in which he means it over here, no Achleratos means that, yeah, it's no big deal. You write an $18 check to the charity of your choice and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will just mavat the whole thing, right? The karega chishkao yisnachem al ara. Yeah, you know, it's not a big deal to get him to change his mind and to back off of his terrible promises. HaKadosh Baruch Hu vatrin hu, right? One could easily think, standing there on Rosh Chodesh Nisan after the whole event of the Ma'aseh Egel and seeing how, in a sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a complete turnabout. Right? I mean, basically, they went from being on the, you know, God threatening the imminent destruction of the Jewish people to, you know, the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming down and revealing itself. So Klal Yisrael really could have and probably did react by saying, okay, I guess God's easy. It's not hard to get him to change his mind. So therefore, there was this tremendous need to balance that, to show the people that their mistaken impression of God as being a vatram was not true at all. Well, the haras the Indian kawa me'od, asher b'yom chatzunasso, v'hukmu ha'kohanam l'sharis k'zeit Hashem, avur dover echar asher lo tzivo, nisrafu l'snei Hashem. So God had to come down hard, right, and to show the people that he wasn't afraid, kivyachol, to use the brass knuckles to kill the two of the greatest Kohanim among the Jewish people for a minor infraction on a day when it was so inauspicious. But he was making a point, the Ribbono Shel Olam. Anyone who's ever taught knows that sometimes if you want to get control of the classroom, you know, at first day you just got to single out one or two kids and just, you probably remember from back in the classes in YU, I never did this, that's probably why I had no classroom management skills, but that's a separate issue. Really, if you know what you're doing in teaching, you're supposed to single out one or two kids, you know, who make some kind of minor infraction, and you throw the book at them the first day, and then, you know, everybody knows, okay, you don't mess with this Rebbe, you don't mess with this teacher, you know, everybody knows, that, you know, they're gonna come down hard on you. You know, again, you know, Lahavdil, Kivyachol, whatever, but I mean, the Rav Shlomo Olam needed to do that right about now, because God's reputation out on the street was, yay, push over. Look, you know, we built an ego. And, you know, he let the whole thing slide. So the Rav Shlomo Olam's power as, you know, as one who can rule with a certain degree of yiras ha'onesh, of fear of punishment, is about to collapse. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, has to do something dramatic in order to regain that yiras ha'onesh that people have. In a sense, where they might say that right. So again, so the explanation then would be okay. Tzadikim chut kechutat tzayru. No, there's all these other things, you know, but. You know, so, but the regular people will at least be put on edge, you know, because you see that, you know, you don't mess with the Rav Shlomo Olam.
What about all the people that punishment that, you know, the act of the Moshe.
There's so many people who died by the ego.
Right.
Enochinam, that's a very strong point. It's interesting that he doesn't mention that. I guess the idea is people tend to forget. It sounds bizarre, but you know, we know in real life, you know, okay, it was terrible, all those people died, but now the Mishkan's here, and now everything's hunky-dory, and everything's great, and all of a sudden people forget about all of those people who died, you know, as in the aftermath of the Chet HaRekha. Right? So that, it was necessary, laharos kama gadol kocha shel aveira, to show the people in a strong way the extent of the power of an aveira. That God will punish in a fantastic fashion, even on a light sin. That's what the pasuk says. You see, I will be sanctified through Dafka, the ones who are close to me. These were tzaddikim. Nobody denies they were tzaddikim. But I'm even going to punish the tzaddikim if they mess up. And now my covet will be restored. Covet in the literal sense of the term. My covet will be restored to the rest of the people. They will not mess with HaKadosh Baruch Hu after seeing this display. The deaths of Nadav and Avihu are in certain sense an antidote to everything that's happened, to the ease with which the Jewish people were forgiven after the Ma'aseh HaEgel. But if not for this, I wouldn't be able to show my covet to the Jewish people. The Jewish people might think that if God just shows his glory to the Jewish people without demanding anything in return, they might think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just easygoing. God forbid that the one who's responsible for justice would not act in a just fashion. The Kivan Shigilo Shizet Yibel Hashraf Hashkinah Yisrael. Once Moshe Rabbeinu told Aaron, you know why we're zoked that to have the Hashraf Hashkinah today? It's because of the sacrifice your sons made. Their death enables HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show his Shekhinah because he can now bring his Shekhinah to the people without compromising the idea that he's a God of justice. When Aaron heard that, Vayidom Aaron. Aaron was silent. He accepted that. That's what it says in the pasuk. You took him later. Now the other Kohanim are not supposed to show any signs of mourning. Only your brothers, the Jewish people, will bemoan the tragedy. Why should they bemoan the tragedy? Because ultimately they share a degree of responsibility for the deaths of Nadav Avihu. Had the Chet HaEgel not happened, says the Meshech Chachma, so the death, you know, Nadav and Avihu wouldn't have died. That's basically what he's saying. Right? The strength and the ferocity with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to the minor infraction of Nadav and Avihu, it wasn't overreaction. But the overreaction was necessary to counterbalance the tremendous act of forgiveness which HaKadosh Baruch Hu had engaged in after the Maisa Egel. Had there been no Maisa Egel, and had, you know, just the Mishkan been built in the ordinary course of events, and had Nadav and Avihu even made the mistake which they made, you know, in that alternate parallel universe, so they wouldn't have been killed, says the Meshech Chachma. The need for their deaths was to counterbalance what had happened with the Egel. He continues on. Uvemedrash Vayakil, Tov Shem Yishem and Tov. Tov Hoyosh Mosa, Shokhanarim Yishov Azayu, Yishem and Amishcha, Shinim Shechu Nodov Va'aviyu V'chula. Right, the Medrash comments, based on the Pasuk on Koheles, that the Kiddush Hashem generated by Chananel, Mishael, Azaria, when they refused to bow down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, was greater than the Kiddush Hashem which was created by Nadav and Avihu. Their shame, their name, was better than the, than Shem and Tov, than Nadav and Avihu, what they did what they did as people who bore the Shemen HaMishcha, the oil of anointment upon their heads. What's the comparison between Chananel Mishael Azariah and Nadav and Avihu? So he says, so Inyan, Da'al Yidei Chananel Mishael Azariah, Hayo Kiddush Hashem Gadol Me'od. When Chananel Mishael Azariah came out of that Kibshan Ha'esh, when it came out of that furnace, it was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Adonofan Nebuchadnezzar Ve'omar, If you read Sefer Daniel, which describes the events, the Nebuchadnezzar is just going wild. After Chananel Mishael Azariah come out of the furnace, he's praising God. There's no God like this God. He's just going on and on. The Omer Devirikshus, Nebuchadnezzar said it with tremendous feeling. It was Zekas Alumov, it's Pashkus HaKashmi Vachno. He said it with tremendous contrition, with tremendous kavanah. Chazal say in the Sanhedrin that Nebuchadnezzar was so overwhelmed with a true religious feeling after Chananel Mishael Azariah came out of the Kibshan Oesh that the Shvachim, the praises that started coming out of his mouth, threatened to dwarf Sefer Tehillim. Right? In other words, Sefer Tehillim written by David HaMelech was about to be overshadowed by what Nebuchadnezzar was about to say, until, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ubo Malach, the Satra Alpiz. Until the Malach came, slapped him on the mouth, prevented him from continuing, and Baruch Hashem, you know, Sefer Tehillim is still number one on the religious bestseller list, you know, of praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hasn't been eclipsed by anything produced by Nebuchadnezzar. So says the Gemara. The Meshech Chachma deals with the basic question over here. You know, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevent Nebuchadnezzar from continuing? Isn't that, in a sense, the curtailing of the Zechirah Chavshus? Right? If Nebuchadnezzar is about to praise the Ribbono Shel Olam in so many extraordinary ways, so let him dwarf Sefer Tehillim. All right, why do you want to take that away from Nebuchadnezzar? Okay, so he's a Rasha? Okay, but let him get this post. Maybe this will be the beginning of his Tshuva. Bad PR for David HaMelech. I mean, we can't, you know, I can imagine everybody getting together on a, you know, we have, we divided up Nebuchadnezzar's, you know, Psalms into 30 sections, and everybody sang a section a day, you know, I mean, okay, doesn't sound really good, okay, but if he deserves it, he deserves it. What's with the Malach coming and slapping him on the face? On the mouth. So, Meshech Chachma gives a fascinating interpretation. Ha'inyan, says the Meshech Chachma, Malach in this context doesn't mean a little guy with wings came down and slapped the Nebuchadnezzar on the mouth. Malach means his own taivus. It's something within him, his own physical desires. And what Chazal was getting at in this context is the following. Nebuchadnezzar was overwhelmed with a tremendous, sincere religious feeling. But it came and it went. I mean, that's what it means to be a Rasha. Right? Now, the Rasha can have that moment of religious feeling and religious enthusiasm as well, but he can't maintain it. Right? Because 2 minutes later, after he has this incredible religious feeling, all of a sudden, all of the taivas, all of the physical desires that he has come back, they flood him again, and he says, whoa, what was I thinking? Write Sefer Tehillim? Come on, I'm not going to do that. I'm going out to a bar tonight. You know, I'm not, I have no interest in writing shvachim, in writing praises of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? So that's this Nashachach, that's Pshat Bo Malach, the Sasra Al-Pir. It doesn't mean an external Malach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, somehow prevented him. It's a way of describing poetically the inner struggle that Nebuchadnezzar had. Nebuchadnezzar had a moment of religious, spiritual devotion, but then all of a sudden he came back to his regular self. That's Bo Malach, the Malach of Taiva that was within him. Came and slapped him on the mouth and said, what are you doing? Come on, this is not you. Nebuchadnezzar, what, you became Prum all of a sudden? You know, stop it. You know, go back to the behemoth that he used to be before this whole thing happened. Right? So that answers the issue of his Bechira Chavshis. This was his Bechira Chavshis. God didn't take it away from him. He chose to give in to his taivas and to not capitalize on that moment of religious enthusiasm. By the way, I mean, this Shachachma doesn't say this next piece, but it's tremendous, tremendous mussar. The difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, or between what's doing what's right and what's good, is not that moment of inspiration. Anyone can have that moment of inspiration. A Nebuchadnezzar could have a moment of inspiration wherein he could be greater than a David HaMelech. So what's the difference between a David HaMelech and a Nebuchadnezzar? So a David HaMelech takes that moment of inspiration and runs with it, and he preserves it, and he builds on it, and he doesn't let it slip aside. And the Nebuchadnezzar takes that moment of inspiration, and he drops it. Right? The whole difference between being a Nebuchadnezzar and a David HaMelech is whether you run with the ball or whether you drop the ball.
Yeah, most people, when they're inspired, they don't maintain that train of inspiration for all time, right?
Right, so it's true, it's hard, it's not impossible to maintain that same level of inspiration. The question is, do you do anything with the inspiration? Right? You know, a David HaMelech, or you know, let's not even say David HaMelech, a good, fine person takes that moment of inspiration and says, okay, I know this is, you know, this is something which I'm not going to be able to reproduce or hold on to, but what little thing can I do to at least on some level keep the momentum going? Right? And Nebuchadnezzar takes that moment of inspiration and says, well, that was cool, that was nice, you know, that was the real chavaya, and then he drops it and he turns his attention to other things, and there's no concept of continuing that on any level whatsoever. Right? So that's a tremendous mussar for life, right? I mean, the difference between the Nebuchadnezzar and the David HaMelech is that you can reach the same level of inspiration. The Nebuchadnezzar could be on a higher level of inspiration than the David HaMelech. But the David HaMelech does something about it. The Nebuchadnezzar just says, okay, that was interesting. You mean for himself? Right. Well, but Moshe Rabbeinu chooses to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, so that is free will. Right. Okay. So I mean, that would be the conventional pshat that the Malach, you know, is an external force. But again, the Meshech Chachma makes it very easy to reconcile this with the idea of free will, because the Malach is coming from the Nebuchadnezzar himself. And, you know, Nebuchadnezzar isn't listening to any external force, he's just following his own taivas in that regard. So, again, that was Derech Agav, right? But the main point, coming back to us, right? After the Ma'isa of Hanan of Mishal Azariah, the entire world was so overwhelmed by, you know, the way God had saved Hanan of Mishal Azariah, they were moved to a level of Yiras Haromimus, of fear, of awe of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. not fear of God punishing someone, but just they were overwhelmed by the sense of awe for, you know, such an exalted creator who could save the Jewish people, who could save Hananel, Mishael, Azariah under these circumstances. So the Kiddush Hashem of Hananel, Mishael, Azariah generated Yiras HaRomimus. Aval b'nadav avihu haya nikdash b'mechubadai v'ha Yiras HaOnesh HaKholu Kol Yisrael b'nei Hashem la'avor al mitzvoto. Da'af l'bnei palkin d'ilei lo nosiv apin kol shekein la'achrini. The Sefer Neshechachma, as I explained in the previous paragraph, what was the nature of the Kiddush Hashem generated by Nadav and Avihu? The people gained the fear of Yiras HaOnesh, right? Prior to the death of Nadav and Avihu, they thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu was a veteran. You know, do whatever you want, yeah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will forgive you, you know, it's not a big deal. After the death of Nadav and Avihu, they said, wow, if that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats those who are close to him, what's he going to do with us? A healthy sense of Yiras HaOnesh, a fear of punishment, was restored to them. So that's tremendous. Right, I'll say call on that covet. Right, my covet is going to be restored to the people at large. It says the Meshechachma, but it's still a lower madrega than what Hananel Mishael Azariah did. Because Hananel Mishael Azariah generated a sense of Yiras HaRomimus on the part of people at large. Nadav and Avihu were only successful in generating a sense of Yiras HaOnesh, not of Yiras HaRomimus. Right. So again, that's the second point, following up on what he said before. They restored a certain healthy sense of Yiras HaOnesh, which had been lacking after God forgave the Jewish people for the Ma'aseh HaEgel. But yet at the same time, what they did not reach the level of Hananel Mishael Azariah, who had been zochet to generate this idea of Yiras HaRomimus. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you the same question again. What were they thinking?
Okay, let's take a look. What was the question you asked before? We'll see the next paragraph where I think he touches on that a little bit. The Elser Buzza, let me tell you a little bit more about Nadav Avihu. The Ha'omed is Ocheles B'Shoset Avur HaYeled, Chozos Kavanosa La'atzma, Shadvar HaTovim La'av Shemazik L'Chalova Ocheles. L'chein L'hat, L'chein Ocheles. Aval Ha'em Ha'Ocheles B'Shoset Hurak L'Tovos HaYeled, Shirak Mash L'Tovoso Osa. He draws a distinction between a wet nurse who's nursing a child, the child not being her own, and a mother who's nursing a child. We know that, you know, when you're nursing, I don't know if we know, maybe this side of the room knows, that when we're nursing, you know, when one is nursing, the food that one eats has an impact on the quality of the milk and, you know, by extension, an impact on the quality of the nursing child. A wet nurse knows this, and she, you know, she eats and drinks knowing that what she does will have an impact on the child. But as the Meshechachma, the likelihood is, I guess it's the likelihood, depends on the person, but the likelihood is that the wet nurse is not going to be as careful with her diet as a mother would be. Because sof kol sof is the mother doing for the child. The mother is utterly selfless. The mother just sees herself as being a vehicle to provide for the child. She won't eat anything that's bad for the child, even if she likes it. And conversely, she'll eat a lot of things which she doesn't particularly like because she sees them as being good for the child. Whereas the wet nurse focuses more on her own needs. And kind of secondarily, she sees herself as providing for the child as well. Now, granted, that's a sweeping generalization. I'm sure it's not true of all mothers, nor of all wet nurses, but, you know, he's trying to make a point over here. What's his nimshal? Well, hashad hazeh, the breath from which the child nurses, sinor lahotzi acholav el hayoneg, b'lo shum negiah atzmus. From the perspective of the mother, the breath is simply a conduit to bring the milk to the child, and the mother doesn't really care about herself. It's all about the kid. The Eitzo Hashad in Hoya Anoik Mashpia Alov, Vadai Hoya Tov La Hashad, Lachain Amu Shnei Shodayich, the Moshe the Aaron, Shlo Kivnu Ma'uma Lato Aloyusam, Lo Yigishu Benashur Shumayla Al Chavireyem, Vakoyu Kitsino Mashpia Al Chaveru Lazad. The, you know, the Bosik and Shir Ashirim says Shnei Shodayich, Kishnei Atharim, your two breasts are beautiful. They're like Tzomet Tziya, right? It's like twin of gazelles. So Sei Chazal, Rashi brings it there in Shir HaShirim. Shnei Shodayich, the two breasts of the Jewish people of Moshe and Aaron, because between the two of them they taught Torah, they gave milk, so to speak, to the Jewish people. What's the comparison to Shodayim, to breasts? So says the Mashiach Chachma, because just like the mother, she extends her breast to her child, and she has no thought of her own benefit. It's all what's good for the kid. So to Moshe and Aaron, when they gave over Torah to the Jewish people, it was selflessly. They didn't see the Torah as being something which would benefit them and just secondarily benefit Klal Yisrael. It was all about what we can do for the Klal. L'chein omar Moshe, mi'itim v'hoyo kolam Hashem nevi'im, ki'itim Hashem esrucho aleim. That's why Moshe was so selfless. When Eldad and Medad were prophesizing in the camp. So Moshe says, I don't care. Take away Nebuah from me and give it to these people. Hayu shalov emsos, Moshe. Right? I wish that anyone could be a Novi. Meaning, I have no interest, per se, in being the one who teaches Torah to the Jewish people. Let the Jewish people receive Torah from somebody else. The main thing is they should get their Torah. The fact that I'm the conduit or not the conduit, it doesn't make a difference. His only interest was in the benefit of the Jewish people, right? Lochei Nodav and Aviu lacked that nekuta, that point. Shebishal she'olu lahar, hayo Moshe nigash levado v'hem alu imo, v'chol ha'am hayo yusofik lahar, Nodav and Aviu went off with Moshe Rabbeinu part way on Har Sinai. Kostu v'yachtu v'sarokim, v'yoklu v'yishtu. It says that Nodav and Aviu saw God at Har Sinai, and they ate and drank. What does it mean they ate and drank? So Unkulus writes over there, the experience of seeing God was as pleasurable to them as eating and drinking. Right? Nodav and Aviu benefited, they felt good in being the ones who would give over Torah to Klal Yisrael. And in that sense, they were on a lower madrega than Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron said, it's not about us at all, right? The Jewish people should get Torah. If it comes through us, fine and good. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would pick Chaim, Beryl, and Shmerel to be the ones to relate Torah to Klal Yisrael, and Moshe and Aaron would not have that experience, that glorious experience of hearing Torah from the mouth of the Ribbono Shel Olam, okay. They're fine with that too. They care about the Klal. They just want Klal Yisrael to get their Torah. Nodav and Aviu were on a lower madrega. They wanted to give over Torah to the Jewish people, but there was a certain sense of self that was there as well. Nodav and Aviu craved that opportunity to be the ones who would be Mashpiyim. They wanted not just that Klal Yisrael should get the Torah. They wanted to be the ones who would give Klal Yisrael the Torah. Right? That fits in with the idea that Chazal expressed, that one of the things Nodav and Aviu said was, when are these Zakenim going to die and we'll take over and lead the dark? Right? Sounds very callous, right? It's not necessarily so callous. They wanted to lead the dark because they thought they would do a good job, but it was selfish. It was about us. When will we have the opportunity to be the leaders of Klal Yisrael so we can implement our ideas, so we can do it our way? Right? In other words, we think that we have a special role to play, or something of that nature. The total negation of self, which existed with Moshe and Aaron, was something that Nodav and Aviu had not quite figured out. Any attempt to explain their sin, I think according to the Mashiach Chachma, has to reckon with that basic character flaw, namely that they saw themselves as somebodies, and important somebodies. And going back to what Meshach Chachma said before, if they thought that the right thing to do is to bring a Torah that wasn't commanded, and to bring it on the Zeach HaChitzam, b'chulei, 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 you know, that led even great people to make that kind of terrible mistake. That sense of self got in the way and blinded them to some extent in a very, very terrible way. The truth is, when you think about it, this idea of the Meshach Chachma, again, has tremendous mussar, and I think anyone who's involved in Avodah HaKodesh has to reckon with the idea that he's putting forward. Anyone who's involved in Avodas HaKadosh has to ask themselves the question, to what extent is what I'm doing, you know, about the klal, or to what extent is what I'm doing about me, and, you know, promoting myself, or, you know, using this incredible opportunity to give Torah over to people as an opportunity to enjoy the Torah itself that I'm learning, right, and to feel good about the opportunity that I have to work on acquiring and enjoying that Torah. You know, so that's a very, very difficult question for anyone who's involved in Avodas HaKodesh. You know, how much of it is about the self, and how much of it is about, you know, providing for others. You know, the model of Moshe Aaron is that it's supposed to be all about providing for others. It's not supposed to be about the self whatsoever. But, you know, Chatoy Ani Mazkir Hayom, and probably many people would fall into the same category as I do, it's very, very hard to reach that Madrega, the Madrega of another Vanavir, where, yes, it's about the cloud, but it's also about the self. You know, it is a much more common, you know, phenomena, and one could say perhaps in many cases, many Marbitse Torah, maybe it's mostly about the self, and only very, very tangentially about, you know, the ones who are the recipients of the Torah which the person is giving over to others. So that's what Rosh Chochma says, that was the fundamental flaw of Nadav Aviv. Vayechu eto Elokim, vayochlu vayishtu. Nadav and Aviv wouldn't have wanted someone else to be the Marbitei Torah for Klal Yisrael. They wanted that position. Moshe and Aaron would have been perfectly content. Had you gone to Moshe and Aaron one day and said, you know what? You know, guess what? The Jewish people will get the same power, but someone else is going to be the Rebbe. Okay, the Iker is they should learn. You know, so it's not me, it will be somebody else. That's total selflessness. Nadav and Aviv didn't have that Madrega. Nadav and Aviv said, no, we want to be the Rebbe. We like this position. This is pretty good. You know, we don't want to just, you know, be stomp people and call you so. We want to be, you know, Vayechzu Eto Elokim. We'd like to be on that Madrega.
So in a sense, would they replace somebody more suitable? I mean, if the past of Moshe and Aaron, you know, would they replace, would somebody be better?
So, I mean, the respective successors are Yoshua for Moshe and Elazar for Aaron. So, again, I don't know if we have too much evidence for this, but perhaps one can suggest that they just did a better job of Nadav and Aviyu. I mean, Yoshua was totally buckled to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? I mean, Yoshua, we know, Yoshua ben Nun Nar, lo yomish b'tocha Oel. I mean, he was totally buckled to Moshe Rabbeinu in every single regard. You know, so that ability to be mispatil, to nullify the self, in the case of Yoshua, to Moshe Rabbeinu, was apparently a major, major issue that Nadav and Aviyu were lacking. I don't know that we know much about Elazar, but, you know, but presumably he had a lot of that nidra as well. Right, so, it's just, let's skip down a little bit on page Reish Zayin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines at the top of the page. They saw themselves as being special. So that's why when the Kiddush Hashem came about through them, and it was a Kiddush Hashem, you know, their deaths, again, as Meshach Chochma explained before, were responsible for restoring a healthy balance of Yiras HaOnesh into Klal Yisrael, but you know, ultimately they were separated from the rest of Klal Yisrael. They were picked out and treated differently and killed, sort of mido keneged mido, because in their own character traits, they saw themselves as being special. Yeah, they were special. They were specially marked out for this, you know, for this way of leaving the world. Right? So that the Meshach Chochma explains again further is another aspect of the lesson that we learned from Nadav and Aviyu. Okay.
Do you think we're special? Should they really explain
that as well? I mean, it'd be enough. Much of it, you're special. You realize that you're special. You realize that it's valid in part.
Right. And it's
certainly has to live that.
Right.
Right. No, but I mean, again, it comes back to, do you see your special qualities as being an opportunity to help others, right? What Meshech Chachma is suggesting is Nadav and Aviyu had a certain sense of self, which was a little bit more than they should have had. Not just that they recognized their special qualities, they were unwilling to, in theory, allow others to step into their place. Moshe and Aaron, again, as you said before, would have been perfectly happy, you know, for somebody else to be the teachers of Torah to Klal Yisrael. They just cared about the Jewish people being taught. Nadav and Aviru not only recognized their special qualities, but they would have been unwilling to relinquish their position, even in theory, had they recognized that someone else could have done the job equally as well.
So,
I don't know that anyone's saying that they weren't appreciated, but in other words, there was a little bit of too much of ego, you know, which was involved over there. Again, you know, it's represented in the idea that even in theory, they wouldn't have been willing to relinquish, you know, their role of teaching Torah.
So why? So basically, they brought the Torahs in the Shulchan.
Yeah.
So why? What were they thinking when they did that? Didn't they know it was wrong?
Apparently not. They thought that it was a good thing to bring an extra carbon to Hashem. And even though, you know, they hadn't been commanded, okay, but we're smart. You know, we can figure out what to do. Okay, we'll continue again next week at the time, 8:25 in Bialas Dakashul, and keep getting a little bit later as the weeks go on.